Good morning, good morning, good morning. I am still traveling, trying to get back to the house, and man, it's just one of them days for your brother. But you know what? It's the New Year's, and I'm not going to let this stuff get me down. Anyway, I'm trying to get to the board on my phone so I can let folks in, but it seems that I'm having some problems. And so how do you handle problems? How will you handle problems in the new year? What will you do when you face with hard times? What will you do when things not going your way? What can you do when you're trying to do the best you can do? We're going to find out these things in a few minutes, soon as the line clears for me to get on and receive our people, right? And so the line is opening up. I see it's spinning, and we're going to go right here to our host with the most, Mr. Marvell Wilson. And Mark's on the line. I got to go. There we are.
All right. Good work then. So good morning, Mark. Good morning to our listening audience. And
Grand Rising.
And great, yeah, Grand Rising, yeah. So I think it's important to stop and acknowledge the joy that we felt, or the exhilaration and the feeling of humanity that was just a part of the festivities within this season, and attempt to duplicate those stimuli and keep them in our practices as we go forth, so that we don't have to wait for a day or two to be appointed or to demonstrate these things, because it's pretty clear that we have a habit within us. As you travel during this season, I'm not sure if it's the same for everyone else, but as I travel through this season, people greet me with a certain amount of, I guess, recognition of my humanity and what part I play to make them feel whole and make them feel like we have a kinship. And I experienced that all through the season. However, what I've also observed is after a few days into January, after we've initiated our resolutions, and some people throwing the towel after a week or so because they see that it's not something that they're going to be absolutely committed to. And so with that lack of commitment might also accompany the go back to the same old semi-antisocial, just do enough to get along behavior toward each other. And it's an observation of mine, and it's kind of disappointing for me to observe how when things go back, they seem to, you know, like put us in a mindset that, well, okay, it was a we thing for a couple of weeks, now it's back to me, and you don't count that much. So I don't know if that's anybody else's experience, but I've observed it to be something that pervades the atmosphere after the depression of trying to figure out how you're going to recoup. You spent all your money and spent all your energy to celebrate, and now you're looking at gathering yourself, and some people fall into a state of depression because they're not seeing their way out of the predicament that they might have created by overextending themselves or making sacrifices and then getting disappointed when they gave somebody something and they weren't as exhilarated or excited about it as you thought they would be. So I don't know. I'm not trying to cast a dismal shade over the season, but I am attempting to get to the reality that I've seen occurs post-Christmas season. So, Mark, you how you feel about it?
I feel great about it, my brother. I've seen so much, you know, not just this Christmas season, but just the past year's period. And I'm going into this year with every day that's gone past is just what it is, my past. Refuse to bring any of that past into the present so it will not affect my future. Like I said, it's hard to answer questions for others, but what I know I'm going to do for myself this year, and it's, I'm not going to even call it a resolution. It's just something I'm going to strive to do, and that's to go into everything with a positive attitude, even the negativity that I may face further on up the road or as the days go by. I'm going to face it with a positive attitude. No matter what comes my way, I'm going to look at the positivity in it because there's a positive in everything. Else the negative wouldn't be there. And then to that negative comes to affect your positivity. And only we can protect our positiveness is by not allowing that negativity to dwell on us. Because, you know, as you said, a lot of people woke up this morning pounding the floor, banging on walls, banging on tables, trying to rob Peter to pay Paul because they done overspent. And that's what this season is meant for. So you will overspend. And, you know, so many people have fallen subjective to that over the years, and they'll do it again next year. They'll say, I ain't going to do it no more, but they'll do it again because it's an addiction. They can't wait for that time to come around. Instead of saving up for it, like they did back when I was a kid, they had the Christmas fund, you know. They would go to the banks and put money in just for Christmas. And that money accumulates money, so when they Christmas time come around, they have more to spend. But they didn't go over that budget. But now they have so much out there for you to choose from, and you want to choose it all, that you go over your budget. So, I mean, it's all about self-control. And that's one of the main things we got to do is our own self-control. We got to control ourselves, control our thinking, control our surroundings. You know, I hear a lot of people say, well, he act like this, I ain't going to be around him no more. But then you got to think, why does that person keep coming around you? And you have to leave from where you are to get away from that person. If you let your light shine, darkness going to flee. So some things we can't avoid, some things we can't escape. We have to work within that, and that's where that positivity come in at. See how your positiveness can eradicate all that negative. Because if two people are hooked together, one is going to follow the other. So if you chose to stand strong, you're going to lead. But you can't falter. You can't give up and say, oh, shoot, he's better than me. He's right. No, if you think you're right, stand on that. And that's what we got to do. As brothers, we got to stand. We got to stand on righteousness, truthfulness, and just be positive. Ashe. I digress.
Ashe. Hey, so we have a couple of more callers in. Caller, you are on the Wise Words of Wungon show. It is the 2nd of January, and you have just called in. Who is this calling from the 916-268 number?
This is Mr. William Bailey. How are we doing today, sir?
Okay.
Good. So I was listening to your response, or rather the statement you made about, I'm going to call it individual responsibility. Is this what the theme of the show is today?
Actually,
hello.
We're going to meld into a theme that we have in the on the back burner, but it's kind of open right now. We're just getting people's interpretations and you know, projections about what this new year represents based upon how we ended the former year. And the most people ended it with the culminated with the celebration of the gift giving and all of the decor and all of the practice of the Christmas season. So now we're in a new age. I'm not in a new age, but a new year where if one is not careful, they'll be overshadowed by what happened last year. It's like I was thinking about an analogy about how not to pour new wine into an old wine skin. So,
amen.
With the nuance that we're talking about of the new year, are you still dragging in, you know, stuff from last year that you have to correct in order to proceed with your new year? So that's where we started out with.
Well, I can say this for myself, that my year ended better than it began last year in 2023. And yet there's still a lot of work that I individually have to do. And when I'm having this conversation, I like to usually use a lot of my own I statements, because I know I've, you know, made the mistake of projecting onto others in the past my problems as if they're my problems were theirs too. But I know perspective can have a huge impact on how I not only perceive my own reality, but others as well. And I know they should be divided when talking about these types of things. And for me, I believe that for this new year, the responsibility that I have is to do part of what you said, which is stop allowing others to have that negative influence on, first, my own choices, you know. Standing on what I believe, that is huge. I believe that I can also do a better job of not playing second fiddle to those who have a vision and a plan and who are actually executing it, because I'm doing the same with the difference of they may be further along than I am, and I need to know that I have the right to exist in my own space. I believe in creating what is called a safe space. And that safe space is not just about, you know, just me feeling safe. It's about me being in a place that represents peace for me. So if it's going to a park more often on my own, or if it's, you know, finding someone I can have the conversation with that I know is there to pull me up, not pull me down, you know, I'm creating for myself a safe space. And in that safe space, it allows me to think and to be mentally and emotionally free to pursue my own interests, and to, if I have to start at the, you know, the starting board with a sounding board, I do that. But individually, I believe that for 2024, I'm going to go into my business full-fledged. If I have to, you know, release some other obligations that might be holding me back, I'm going to do that. And I want to spend more time with my mother, who's 89 years old and alive and kicking like she's 50. And I'm going to make sure I get as many years with her while she's alive before she, transitions is the word I guess I'll use here. But my mother's been a good woman. She's lived through so many eras and decades, like you were speaking about before that. I feel like there's a lot that I still need to gain from her before, God willing, she goes to see Jesus. And I need to make sure that I give her flowers while she's alive. And I know you say it often. And, you know, build my own family. You know, I was married when I got out. I got married and moved on 43rd and had my own place. And well, we had our place, and we, you know, I had a couple of cars, a couple of jobs. I mean, we were doing well. And when she passed, that was half of my income, and I had to start all from the bottom all over again. So my life has been on a rebuilding phase. And I found that when you're on your rebuilding phase, well, while I was on my rebuilding phase, a lot of people, you know, lost a certain level of respect for me because I didn't have the things that they had. You know, I had my car, but didn't have my own place like I used to anymore. So, you know, I had to go into transition. I, I, you know, would go into business with one person and one group, and they would, you know, sort of look down their nose to me. And for it to come from my own made me feel like I wasn't surrounded by the right people. So I had to cut some fat from the meat. And now in 2024, I'm able to see clearly to surround the importance of surrounding myself with people that have my best interest at heart, because I always have everybody else's best interest at heart. I'm always willing to give, even if they don't return it, because I know my reward comes from the Creator. So I guess for me, that would be my response for the year 2024 and what my individual responsibility be and what I need to take responsibility for so far as my own goals are concerned.
I see. So I'm going to tell you, I interpreted a whole bunch of things out of your presentation, Bill, that one of the things that you struck upon was the word peace. And that, you know, it kind of stirred me when you said it, peace, because that's precisely what I felt Mark was alluding to, is that in order for the attitude to be able to look at things through a positive lens, is that you come from a place of personal peace. And so I was going to ask Mark, what's his formula for getting there and staying there? Because I attempt to practice that, but then some things will come up, and then I'll feel justified to lash out, or I'll feel justified to you know, mum on my breath, who got a lot of nerve, kind of reaction to things. However, if I do practice gathering myself at that point and doing some what they talk about in anger management is the breathing exercises, or do a quick self-reflection, or what I think was more pertinent with, say, Bill, is, and I'm not putting you out there, you know, in your dossier, but what I am saying is that when you have a background of challenges that put you in a position where you're really under pressure, and you're really having, you know, if things are not going well for you, then when you reflect now on what might be troubling you now, or what might irritate you now, if you just reflect on where you were and then, you know, get the perspective about where you are now despite this little challenge, that gratitude for where you are now can dispel, or can dispel whatever I might be experiencing at the time. So that's a benefit that some of us have, is that we have pasts that say, shoot, man, there was a time when I wish I had this problem right here. I wish I had this challenge right here. Shoot, yes, I'd have took that. If you had to say, hey, keep what you got or give me this new one, give it here. Get a new one here right now. I'll work with that without no problem. So,
yes,
you know, I want to emphasize that word peace is something that I think that if we focus and strive on it individually, however we can find it within ourselves to proceed to look and deal with each other, I think that was a key word that you said, Bill, that peace.
Well,
so
yes,
I'm striving for that. I'm striving for the personal peace that disallows me to be rattled by things outside of me, especially those I can't control. You know, I
Amen.
Have to assess them.
Well, I'm here to help you obtain it.
What?
Let me give you a little insight on it. Let me give you a little insight.
I understand. See, they got a terminology in a fellowship that says that we are each other's eyes and ears.
Amen.
We are each other's eyes and ears, right? So I don't mind, and I hope you don't either. You know, to pull up, man, when I might be falling to the left or to the right, it's like,
we'll help us one to another.
Because
when it comes to...
Go ahead. I'm going to say one more thing, and I'm going to let it go.
Okay.
Dig this
okay.
here. See, if we don't do it with each other,
it's not probably not going to get done, and if it done, it's done in a way that seems more like ridicule rather than that
encouragement.
Encouragement.
Right.
That's So, peace, man. Let's look at it. Let's look at it and examine it, and we urge everybody else to do the same. Examine where your personal peace begins and how do you keep it so that you can share that with anybody you encounter.
Okay. Obtaining peace is something. Peace is just like joy. It comes from the Creator. It's something that's already placed within you, but you have the keys to unlock it, but you have to want it. It's something you have to want to desire, because so many times we'll get peace and we'll give it up. We allow something negative to come in and to destroy it. So in obtaining peace, you have to find solitude. You have to find a place of peace. You have to get back to nature and its surroundings, whether you like to fish, take a long walk in the woods, and I'm not saying the park, because parks are man-made, although they do have some structure out there that's God-made, but you need to get around the majority of things that's God-made. That's where you'll find your peace at. You'll get a chance to get rooted, get grounded, and once you find your peace, you'll begin to see the joy that God has placed in you, and those are things that man can't touch. Like I said before, man can give you happiness, but happiness is temporal. Joy is everlasting. Joy is something you can reach down in when you're feeling bad and just put a smile on your face instantly. It's just like when my mother passed away years ago. I didn't feel no anger, no malice. She's gone. I ain't got my mama no more. I didn't feel that. I felt joy because she was at peace. I saw the peace on her face, a big, beautiful smile. And I knew she wasn't worried anymore. She didn't have to deal with this mess anymore, the cares of the world anymore, medications, pains, all that was gone. And we can have that same peace while we are living. But like I said, you have to get rooted and grounded. We have items, God has placed items there to help us. Sometimes we can't get out to the wilderness or to the ocean or go fishing or something. But you can go to the African Market Center, obtain you a couple of rocks or something, something you can put in your hand and just rub it and just meditate and just thank God for his structural being. Thank God for the things that he's given us. That's how you maintain your peace. And whenever you get angry, because you're going to get angry, but you could always resort back into your peaceful state when you start thinking about those things. And that's what helps me a lot, because I get angry a lot. Because like I say, I don't have the finances that a lot of you brothers have. And I can't do a lot of things that you brothers could do. Like you was able to hop on a plane and go see your mother. That's something to be thankful for. No doubt. I can't even hop on a plane to go see my kids, but I can pick up the phone and talk to them. So I'm thankful for that. I could even look at them now, you know, get videos of my grandkids. So I'm thankful for those things. And that is your peace, whatever you find joy in. I know you found a great deal of joy being with your mother. When she calls in, I could hear the joy in your I could basically just feel the joy when you talk to her, you know, the first time you talk to her on the phone. And I find peace in that. So I find peace in others' happiness. I find peace in others' joyfulness. So those are the things we have to do. And we have to not allow the things that make us angry to live in our heads rent-free. That's the number one thing. If somebody pisses you off, oh, well, that's them. That's the way they are. So now I learn to expect that when I come around this person, I learn to expect that negativity, because, like I say, some things you can't avoid. We'll say, well, I'm cutting these people out of my life. That might not be God's intention. God may bring that person around so he can learn from you, so he can grow from you. You know, and that's why I say you have to be strongly rooted, because Some people, they need to be around somebody that's going in the right direction so they can engraft themselves to them and pick up some of that good strength, see, so they can get nurtured. And it doesn't make us weak unless we're weakened to begin with. See, if we got a something going on with us already in our hearts, then, of course, it's going to grow. But then, too, you have to look at it in a positive way. That's bringing it to the forefront, something that you see that you didn't recognize before. And that's what I do when I go get around people, especially when I get in close spaces with people. I begin to see what's in me because I look at them and they'll bring something out of me. You know, it would be it anger, sadness, whatever. They'll bring it out of you. Then that's something you can work on. But if they don't bring it out of you, it'll just lay there and fester till you just explode. And that's one thing I like about the healing circle. We have that togetherness. We got men in there from all walks of life that's been through all types of situations. Some of us have been through the same situations, but not the same way. And we can draw from that. You know, we got brothers in there, man, with some great minds. Great wisdom, lots of wisdom.
Absolutely.
And I love it, man. And so like I say, man, it's simple, my brother. If you want to go fishing, me or Tim going to get you out there. But just so you can get your feet wet, you'll get out there, you'll find some. You might just want to go out there and throw rocks in the water. As long as you ain't throwing rocks while I'm fishing, you're all right. But you'll be surprised what you'll find that'll be peaceful to you. And you'll begin to enjoy it. I digress.
Right on. Yeah, so that's one of the types of formulas that we're urging people to consider or to contribute to those headings, because when we talk about love, when we talk about peace, when we talk about joy, and when we talk about things that are pleasing and favorable to experience, there's a route that one may deserve to take to get it, and a practice of that same formula to keep it. And that's where we go on our broadcast, is that we delve into not just the labels or the titles of what the ultimate experience is, but the how-to part. How do we get there? And then how do we stay rooted in the practice once we get there? Because I want everything that you just described. However, knowing myself and knowing the trauma and the anticipation that something is going to go wrong, my experience is when I start doing something and it starts going right, in my history, things seem to continue to go right, but for so long before something happens from outside of me that kicks it. Like, for instance, our broadcast here. Okay, we're going along smoothly. Then all of a sudden, they want people to pay. Some people can't get on because of their network or the plan that they have, the phone that they have, and all that. You know, so. That's just one of the microcosm of what my total experience has been with attempting to practice something, getting it going, and then all of a sudden it seemed like something would happen. And for me, it was something, the mechanism inside of me that made it so that my self-centeredness propelled me to make it happen instead of somebody else. So I would sabotage my own goodness and flow, right? Because I anticipated that it wasn't going to continue. So getting in the practice of not only anticipating things that will go well, but being prepared to not allow those things that might thwart you as you go forward to stop you from continuing to be optimistic and continue to pour in to what you want to experience. I think that's a part of the formula, because we're probably going to have those challenges that we meet on our route to keep things going smoothly. It's just that if we throw in the towel, before the bout is over, then we lose by default.
Well, I have to agree to that 100%. I kind of wanted to throw a little something in on both of those comments. So going back to the I statements from myself, I have to say that, they talked about this thing called the holistic wheel, and I know a lot of you guys are already familiar with it, but this was back then when I was doing some of the college work, when I was in the stoop, that kind of helped me to change my perspective about my own reality, because I knew that I had to do some work to change the way I thought, so that I became not a detractor or someone that was destroying my community, but I became a builder, someone who contributed something positive to my community. And in the holistic wheel, I found out, like, imagine two pie charts, and the first one represents my 24 hours in a day, and I divide it up into how many hours I spend in my job, how many hours I spend with maybe family and friends, how many hours I spend in church or in prayer with my higher power or the creator, or maybe highly glorified, or whatever else that may represent the average of my day. And then I look for the imbalance in that. And if I'm finding, for example, I'm spending more time at the job than I am with family, then I know there's an imbalance, because there should never be a time that my work becomes far more important than my family. Now, that doesn't mean that sometimes circumstances doesn't make it so that, like with our parents, they don't spend a lot of time at work and not as much time at home, and have to try to find ways to creatively compensate for that. This is not a judgment, because I'm using the I statements here. I'm saying that over time I am willing to become progressive enough to find where I can be better at my time management, because the second wheel represents what type of time that I want to spend with my daily activities, and then I divide that wheel into another pie chart that represents how I balanced those imbalances. If it's more time spent at work than with family, how can I find ways, whether it's creative or not or constructive, to balance that time out so that I don't find myself bringing my problems at work home and taking my, you know, maybe frustrations out at work, out on my family members. Because those are the type of things that happened, I found, is that when my mind perceives an experience that I'm having as stressful, I go into distress rather than eustress. And what happens is it triggers what you were talking about earlier about, you know, those who learn anger management, you know. It'll trigger maybe an old thought, an old trauma, an old bad experience, and it'll make me think that that's happening all over again, and I'll react in a way that makes me feel like I have to defend myself against another trauma, or reliving that trauma, or re-experiencing something similar, when in fact that thing may not be happening at all. And so my perspective has taught me that the greater level of self-control that I exercise over me can be found in the way that I perceive my own reality. And the way that I manage my time can be a part of that. So this holistic wheel for me has been a way to live holistically, more healthily, in a way that allows me to not be reactive but be more responsive. I've learned the word STAR, which is an acronym which stands for stop, think, analyze, and then instead of react, it's respond. Because instead of, like I've heard you say before, Mr. Timothy, that, you know, instead of us being reactive, we have to be more responsive. We have to learn to stop and think about what we're going to say and do before we do it, so that we give ourselves the space to respond in a way that is more constructive and has less negative consequences to my personal experience. But I just kind of wanted to add that in about the holistic wheel, time management, and the impact traumas can have on, past traumas can have on our present perspective, and learning how to, instead of react, learn to respond by giving myself the mental space to think about what I'm doing before I do it. Again, it's STAR, stop, think, analyze, then instead of react, respond. Thank you.
Good formula. See, that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about the breakdown of the of the suggested processes we can apply to circumstances,
yes.
Right? So that we're responsible. It's called being in being the initiator to the next phase rather than being the being responsive or reactive to the last phase, something that was proposed or put in your circle to deal with, how you turn it around to make you the one who decides what happens next. So stop. I don't want to be at the mercy of someone's next decision. That's one of the things.
Amen.
There's a couple of things I hate. I hate looking for something that I ain't got no chance of finding. Like when back in the day, somebody would steal your dope and you looking for it, you know, and you ain't got no chance of finding. So that's one thing I hate. And then that aspect that I just mentioned is the two things that I really dread having to go through. So that's a good formula to break it down and to do the self-analysis, right? Because that's one thing that I think, especially our culture, the trigger for the energy of anger is so hair, like the hair trigger, whop, off and running. No self-reflection, just you, what you said, what you did, what I think about you, and what I'm going to do to you because of what you made me feel. And that's our experience. And what we're proposing is that it's most important for us to consider to stop and recognize what the offspring of this triggering could usually have. And it's not toward peace. It's not toward love. It's usually toward chaos, more chaos, to add to the trauma and the experience of chaos and all the things that we've experienced here. Let's not forget where we came from when we got here traumatically and personally. We had a lot of experiences that we haven't dealt with. So let's be cautious and very mindful about how we react to things that come from that trigger our internals. Because when somebody heard Mark say, "I get angry," Mark, I'm already angry. I just have to learn how to manage it, categorize it, and then turn it around to let that anger energy become something productive after I do my maintenance. Because when we talk with the kids that we work with, you know, the ultimate thing when we're sharing what we tell with the kids about what's going on that they might not be aware of, in my heart, the most powerful motivator to get them to look at and change their behavior is that they become insulted by what they hear.
Mm.
They hear that and they say, "Look, no, man, really? That's what you think?" And they think, "I'm gonna keep going for that." That's what I ultimately want them to experience, that feeling of being insulted. So we're talking about formulas here, folks. So anybody got something to add, come on home with it, because we're looking for not just the challenges, but we're looking to delve into how to create potential solutions. And we have a varied range that each individual might be comfortable. Find your comfort zone and throw it out there. Put it in. Pour in. Please.
Peace and blessings. Peace and blessings, everyone. This is One Gone. And so yesterday was my anniversary. I've been married 5 years to my wife, and God has been good to us. But I had got a call about a 10-year-old shooting and killing another 10-year-old. And it kind of took me and my wife way back, because I'm a crisis intervention worker. And what I do is I go out and support families of those that have been victimized through either gun violence or a tragic death, right? And so when you saying a 10-year-old kills a 10-year-old, this is not gang activity, what I'm used to, going out there where Lil Pookie didn't finally caught a bullet for being Lil Pookie. This is an innocent youth showing off his daddy's gun and end up killing a neighbor, right? And so my heart and all of my inside go out to this family. I went out last night on my anniversary day and went out to support someone else, right? So I just want you to know for my New Year's is going, it started like that and it probably end like that because it's been like that for the last 10 years I've been doing this work. And so what I want to say to parents in this New Year's, it is time to talk to our young folks. It is time to include our young folks. It is time for us to listen to our young folks because we are not in our young folks' ear enough. Not enough, you know. And if you are a parent that tells your child, go ahead, get away from me, give me a moment, give me a break or whatever, I think you need a little counseling. And I suggest you go do that, get you some counseling, because I know parenting don't come with a manual, but you are a parent. And you might have to learn on the fly, you know. You might have to learn on the fly. But what I do want you to know is that if you pay attention and give attention, that you will jump over all the hurdles that may be in your way. You're going to need a little help, so reach out to those that you trust in, because this is a sad situation, and I didn't want this show to go any longer without us taking a moment for this young 10-year-old who has lost his life tragically. So we're going to take a moment of silence on the Wise Words of One Gone Show. Thank you. And we have some callers on. I see Brother Joe's on here. I see a 216 on here. If you'd like to say something, just push the number 1, and I will open up your phone line. Without further ado, here's your host for this show, Mr. Marvell Wilson. Marvell?
Yes, sir. You know, I'm finding myself being easily moved by circumstances where people are being shortchanged and not getting what they deserve. One of the callers, I think that she's gone to, she raised her hand, I think that's the 216, told me a story about, and I had no idea, and I'm from Ohio, but I've been living in California and aloof from a lot of the policies. She told me that in Ohio, and I want to make sure I'm saying this correctly. She can fill in the blanks. I think she called in. She's going to speak. But she told me that in Ohio, the governor passed legislation that allows an 18-year-old with a license and no record to purchase a gun. So they have this open carry policy here, right where I am right now. I didn't even know it. I didn't even know that the person I'm sitting next to on the rapid or next to on the bus or downtown walking in the hubbub that they could all be carrying guns. I didn't know that. And then she told me a story about her cousins have the two cousins, two women cousins have each has a son and they're close and they both ran out and got them guns. And she said that one cousin didn't know how to operate the machine, and so he playfully pointed at his other cousin, squeezed off a round, and shot his cousin to death. And that's where we are. That's where we are in this
society if we don't stand and keep pouring in to the logic and the reason and urge critical thinking with our young people. Because they've been playing them video games with fake guns. Now I can get a real one? Oh, wow. Oh, wow. I can get a real one now? Wow. So what have they been doing with the fake guns? They've been practicing shooting each other up. I ain't saying that the kid deliberately did anything, but I'm saying all the behaviors that grow toward the potential were there before this guy passed the law and before they were able to acquire a gun, before they were having a gun in their hand without realizing that to have it in your hand, you should be trained to use it. That shot by all of that. And so we have death as a result, and especially in our culture. Well, we need to be walking around with guns in our community. Why? Why would we need guns in our community? Why? So,
amen.
You know, but they, hey, well, you know, we could say a sign of the time, but every sign that I see, if it's an erroneous sign, if it says one way and I see two-way traffic, then I got to be the one to make sure that nobody adheres to the sign, and so nobody can get hurt. So if it's a sign that's erroneously placed, then we can't keep on walking by it and not correct it or direct the ones who are responsible for it to correct it, or stand there and say, no, don't pay no attention to this. Don't pay no attention to this. This is not right. There's two-way traffic here. This is not a one-way. So these sign of the times means sometimes, or a lot of times, it means signs that we should take actions to disallow carnage or disallow devastation, especially to our people. We're wounded. We need to heal. We don't need Amen. These externals to keep triggering us to act out on anger and do things that we regret. And some people do the rest of their life in the penitentiary. For I got had a buddy just got out of penitentiary. He did 40 years. 40 years in the penitentiary for killing another black person. How ironic is that?
Yeah, this just takes me back to perspective all over again. One, I agree that instead of waiting for other people to take responsibility for changing how we view children with guns, and we have to call them at 18 years old still children because their frontal lobe, according to psychology, is still developing, and they're still learning how to reason. There's very few in our demographic or population that at an earlier age has the social structure, family structure that is responsible enough to train, as the scripture says, raise up a child in the way that it should go so when it's old it won't depart from those ways, you know. And so we know that whether we like to admit it or not, we are all products of our environment in one way or another. Not that things have to necessarily be that way, but when you grow up, you're influenced by the people that you're raised by. I was raised by, for example, I was influenced by my circumstances, various other factors that were constituents of my circumstances. And as I got older, I began to realize how much it really shaped the way that I thought about both myself and the world around me, and about my choices. And what I realized about myself at that age is that I was emotionally unstable.
Dun,
emotionally
dun, dun.
Unstable. And what's so interesting about that for me is that most of the people in the neighborhood that I grew up in didn't have always a father, sometimes, or a mother in the household. Or if they were there, the home was fragmented, full of arguments, violence, broken. And there was only a few families you can go to in a neighborhood and say they were both mom and dad was there, they were both church-going folk, and in spite of the mistakes, they did the best they could, you know. There was only a few houses that you go to like that and say there was a fully structured family dynamic there. And even then, we find that some of the kids, like I did, still go still err in their ways. The reason why this is about perspective for me is because instead of us waiting for, you know, the government or families to hear our message and they finally get it right, sometimes we have to be, I believe that I can be creative about the way that I approach. First, give the message, and then second, instead of me worrying about if someone had a father or a mother or if they were shaped by the right set of circumstances, what can I do, you know, be proactive? What can I do to compensate for that lack of experience, you know? And so every day that I'm out in the community or that I'm communicating with people, this is always the way that I think, you know, because sometimes we have to admit we have to think for others, you know, like they have to think for us at times, because we all have our, as your brother said, our specialty, our skill sets. We all have varied experiences that we can contribute to this collective, both discussion and community. And so we all are contributors, each other's sounding boards, eyes and ears, as he said. And there's something to be said about thinking for others, not because it's a negative thing, or because sometimes when there is a situation that is undergoing, that is, and that we're undergoing, that I'm undergoing, and that I see that I'm not fully in control of, it makes me feel good to know there's somebody there to give me a helping hand, to help me to finish the rest of a sentence, to have an answer that they have that maybe I'm struggling to find, to become my sounding board when I need somebody there to just simply talk to be a listening ear, as Mr. Timothy so often says in the Men's Healing Circle. But we I believe as a collective, we can compensate for each other's lack. And when it comes to us contributing to our society's ills, like gun violence, look at the cause of the factor here. The cause is the way that the person holding the gun thinks. And if they're at an age where their frontal lobe isn't fully developed and they're not able to reason on the level as the older adults, then what happens is, you know, we can expect immaturity, immature decisions and choices, which is the reason why at some ages, children should not collectively have guns in their hands or weapons of that type of destruction, you know, that can take their lives or the lives of another person. So then we expect that the parents or the authority figures are going to be the ones compensating for the way they think, being their disciplinarians. But we know that's not always the case, that kids or young adults always listen to the elders in their community. And so what do? We have to find these creative ways. I have found these creative ways to compensate for the lack. The first way I do it is I'm quiet. When I'm in an environment, in order for me to see the problem, I have to shut my mouth to listen first. And then once I can begin to sense the problems, I ask myself, you know, we always say that mantra, God grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference, right? So we heard the brother say, you know, not trying to control the things that I don't have any control over. So I ask myself, can I help out here? If there's an answer that I can give, then I find a creative way to do it that isn't offensive to the parties to the parties there too. But if I can't, then my job is don't be afraid to ask for help. Go to one of my brothers that I feel like has that skill set or that experience and ask them to participate. And if they're willing, help out with that perspective, helping to reshape the perspective of the young adult or the person. Sometimes they're adults that are mentally still young or just simply lacking information, right? And then if there's anyone there, I can't be afraid to go outside of my community and ask for help. That's the job of a first responder. If you're a first responder in your training or first responder minded, then we look at the problem not from the perspective of what is the cause of the problem, but we're looking for solutions first. And the reason why we have to come with that perspective is because a solution-minded person looks for, is quiet enough to listen for the problems, and then I, in my experience, have found that once I can hear what the problem is, I find out whether or not there's anyone there in their immediate environment that could help. And if not, how can I help? And if I can't, ask for my community's help. And if they can't, then go be willing to even go outside of it if there's information there that we can add to our collective consciousness. You know, because we don't just grow individually, we grow as a community too. Thank you.
Not to unpack, not to unpack. But let me share this, though, about what you expressed in regard to the collectivism and how we can permeate our communities with a consciousness. And that is, if we come up with, okay, we have a core group of men who are active in the community, who are being, our voices are, we're projecting our voices in the community, and we're putting together programs and things to help the community. However, if we were to come up with some jargon that we can just kind of embed into our community consciousness about things, so that everywhere these kids go, somebody's saying it. You know, we come up with something about the gun, come up with a question about the gunplay, come up with a question about the pants hanging down, come up with a question about these things that we observe that we know pulls away at the self-esteem, has to pull away. If your pants hanging off your butt, you can maintain when you only got one hand to help with, and you, every 5 seconds you got to concentrate, take your attention off of something maybe important to pull up your pants. So just, you know, these things, it sounds, you know, kind of off center, but it is part of what's going on that we could pour into by just raising the consciousness and having a theme of jargon. So it's, I think it's kind of important for us as those who are conscious in the community to come up with some hardcore presentations and questions that continue to ask them to look at their behavior and to look at what they think and what they feel about themselves, because that accordingly they reflect that by how they feel about somebody else, because they're taking each other, they're taking other people's lives, and it doesn't seem to get the message how dire that is to take a life. We had one kid. Listen, we had a kid. Was he 12? And he said, "We're in session." He said, "Yeah, I'm gonna get me a gun." He said, because when you got a gun, you get respect, right? And then he said, and then if I got me a body, I'd really get me my respect. And he's 12 years old. And we were astonished. This kid just said, he not only carrying a gun, but getting a body with a gun, and that'll make him feel better and look better. That's what he thinks. Respect. You got to look good and be, you know, well represented to get respect. But he misinterprets respect for fear.
Amen.
He wants people to fear him, right? And rather than respect him for what he brings to the table, he's threatening to take something away if you don't. And that's kind of how we're looking at the grooming of these externals. That's why I say, you know, we have to be able, I think it's important for us to not only look at our how externals impact us, but we have to be aware of how potentially these externals are affecting our young people, and we have to get out in front of those externals and define them. Like I talk about hiding the past. If I see somebody coming in my neighborhood with the shell game, I'm going to tell them first, look, don't come down here with that, because if you do, I'm going to tell them where to pee at. It ain't never under a shell. It's in your hand.
Now get out of here. Now get out of here. Right? Because that's what we have to get out in front and tell and get them so that they absolutely have to do some self-reflection about their behaviors. Until then, you know, these externals have a control. Because part of what I wanted to talk about, and we'll likely delve into it, is this electronic and this phone age, is that the new drug for our kids? Because they're being influenced by these externals that have so much power and affect the dopamine and the epinephrine in their body so much that we'd be hard-pressed trying to get and hold their attention for any message that we have for them.
I dare say they are the new parents.
We strive. That's what I'm saying. We see what we have to teach the parents. That's what I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, is that everybody said, well, it begins at home. And I'm saying what's beginning at home is trickling out into the community. What they're learning at home or not learning is trickling out in the community. What they're learning is go on in there and play your game, go on in there, do what you got to do, because I'm working two jobs, and I ain't getting, when I come home, I'm too tired, so all I can do is give you a quick microwave dinner, give you a hug, ask you about your homework, and if you need some help, I'll have to get you to Google, because I don't know how to help you, because I ain't that astute myself. So the disconnections that are in the home are urging these kids to be more attentive to these externals, and these externals are money driven. All they want you to do is click so I can get paid. Click and say you'll give me your credit card number for whatever it is that we're subscribing. So this is a money driven external, but it has so much power, it has so much influence, and it has all of the bells and whistles and the quickness to give a result, that now we're competing with something that has a total control over the minds of our young people. So we had to be, you know, get out, like you said earlier, we have to be creative. And then we have to be consistent with what we created, have something in the atmosphere that always make like a billboard in the community, a billboard every mile saying the same thing. Look.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Look at yourself. You got a gun? What for?
I know that. It...
What for? You scared?
Mm-hmm.
What you scared of? Why are you so angry? Why are you so afraid of your of the people that look like you? Why? Why is that? So that's what I mean. We're getting into the weeds, man, and we're gonna pull out the weeds, right? We gotta get down in there and pull out the weeds and then keep tilling that ground and keep planting them seeds and keep watering them. That's our job, and we're a select few right now, but we'll attract all of those who have it in their heart to do that once we demonstrate a model for them. So that's what I'm saying, man. We wanna create a model that's easy to follow. And you're doing
Amen.
It, Will, with y'all's organization. Y'all doing it with Tim. Look, me and Tim, we're getting ready to go, hopefully go into the juvenile system.
Amen.
Right? We're hopefully getting ready to go in there. We're hopefully, truthfully, we're going to start the Men Accountable Project, because Tim is committed third Saturday to have a meeting, and I have a select group of guys that we're with the intent of getting them to understand the power of this project. And once we do, we're going to be off and running, making stuff happen and being seen and being emulated by other factions or other organizations that may be a little bit slack right now. We're going to put fire up on them, because that's what we represent right now, this manhood in this particular body. The people that call in have that interest, and the people who are pouring in have that interest, and we're going to build a momentum, and things are going to start happening, because I feel it in my spirit. I feel it in a wave, in the undercurrent. It's in the undercurrent. I want everybody to just stop and say, what's in the undercurrent of what's getting ready to happen? we're going to be making decisions for ourselves. We're not going to wait around for the best interest to be made at the mercy of someone else's next decision.
Amen. Go ahead.
So we have Brother Joe with his hand up. Brother Joe, I see your hand up. Go ahead and introduce yourself and get into the flow of things.
First of all, Happy New Year to everybody that is on the line. And
thank you.
Again, I'm always thankful to God to be able to open my eyes and move about. Marvell and brother,
sir.
It takes a team. A concise team, a team that is, first of all, weeded out of slackers, do-gooders, those individuals, as you just mentioned, who are conscious enough and serious enough to continue to step forward. That team needs to comprise itself of certain individuals. What I mean by that is individuals who are obviously good in one area, and I'll just use this as a conversation, a mechanic, just use that as a conversation piece. A man who is got years of experience, taking that man to that individual or group of individuals. The same thing with this team. Gun violence, that's a lot of adults. That's why that, unfortunately, and God rest that child's soul, that's why this child is not here this morning, because a parent, an adult, the 10-year-old only picked up a weapon, who left the weapon unattended, unlocked, as everyone knows it should be. And how many other parents have guns around their children and not paying attention? So it's the adult, not the child. Unfortunately, the child is not here, as I say, is not here, and we all know. But it was an adult who left that gun unattended. You ask, why do we need guns? Brother Marvell, we're at a time period now where it's highly questionable not to have one because of what our circumstances is around us, regardless of our community. Whites have the same problem to some degree in their community. Hispanics have the same problem. Asians, just recently, Asians here in Sacramento. So guns are here, but it takes a team of adults, adult men, to make some sort of positive change. And that is, and I noticed, and I'll stop here, I noticed that down at Florence Square, the Nation of Islam has a man out with the final call out on the island in the middle of the street. There's some credence to that, but the majority of us are afraid to step to that sort of regimented mentality. But it takes a team. Concise team to tackle the situation that we face. It will take a team to go inside a juvenile home. It will take a team to go to the community. And to back the brother up just a minute ago that was been speaking. It's not a hard task. It's not an easy task, but it's a task that is necessary to be accomplished. And I'll stop there.
Well, Joe, I wanna double back to the need for armament based upon the how what's in the atmosphere and why it might be important for you to be in a situation where you might have to be armed rather than be unarmed. I understand that. I'm just particularizing that. When we look at our youth group, their motivation is not that, clearly. Their motivation is not to be prepared. Their motivation seems to be elsewhere. And then, we, you know, training. Okay, if you have a gun, there should be a training regimen that goes along with it. You should know how to use it. You know, just buying a gun and putting it in a safe, you know, that might be something to curtail or something to minimize the ability for a child to get it. But, you know, all you got to do, the child laying in the bushes because they want to play with the gun, so they're in the bushes. Anytime you leave the safe unlocked or it had a gun out, the child's liable to seize the gun because their motive is not to protect. So that's the emphasis that I'm placing on why I have a gun. Why, you know, let's have a gun for a cause, not just the cause. Because the cause is getting us killed.
If I'm not conscious enough to realize, as you know, if I'm not conscious enough to realize that every move I make at home with my children in attendance, with guns present, I don't need a gun if I'm not conscious to know the safety factor and the reason for it. I should be, quote, teaching. We go back to our historical. When we were 13, 14, and 12 years old in Africa, what did the elders do? The elders grabbed us by the back of the neck and took us out in that jungle that taught us how to hunt, how to bring food back for the village. That's what was taught to us at that age. Obviously, with being here, we've lost sight of all of that type of instruction. We've lost sight of Baba or our elders who could teach us. The gentleman said it just a moment ago, and I've said it repeatedly. A lot of what we talk about starts, unfortunately, at the house. Many houses are not equipped, but that's where it starts. The classroom where you and one going on, it starts in that classroom. There's no other place for an audience of minds except that. I just think that it needs a well-oiled team able to go out and do what needs to be done. I was taught that in the military. I was taught that as an officer. You take a team. I don't like to talk about specialization, but you take a well-oiled team, good team, no matter what the category of that team is, and things do turn themselves around. It takes a moment, but they do turn themselves around. And I just think that if we continue on doing and organize tight enough, we can do this. I've got faith in us. I'm tired of listening to my counterpart. I got faith in us, Marvell.
And that's what it's going to take. And that how do we get to that? We keep
on.
Our
announcements. Last chance to claim your financial relief and have your debts eliminated today.
Amen.
Right on. Okay. Well, me to holler who that is. Hope they're legit.
No.
Let me just finish the faith because
no problem.
When the brother said he has faith, that is like a few brain cells beyond just belief, you know. That's like a working knowledge in the heart of the man that the direction that we're taking is going to succeed, right? And what we want to keep planting the seed of working toward the faith, because a lot of this stuff that we're talking about is stuff that we've already earned. You know, we've earned the rights that we're being denied. We've earned the right to not be fearful in a place where we were tantamount in its structure and in its creation. We've earned the right to not be hesitant about accepting our brotherhood without some sort of dissension. We've earned that. So the faith system is just keep on pointing these things until we become a collective in our recognition of who we are, what we've earned, what we deserve, and how when we all have a one-mindedness about it, that is going to happen. Having a one-mindedness about it. So we're on the cutting edge, but we're pushing forward. I keep on emphasizing to everybody that's within the sound of my voice and the sound of our voice is that this country won't become great until our inequities have been addressed, and we are allowed because there are things that oppose us that disallow, even though we don't really shouldn't need permission, but we really deserve inclusion in all those inequities to make this country the great country that they profess it to be, and to make us become more productive and more wholesome and more spiritual, create more spirit in this country. So this country benefits from our upheaval or our rising. Let's say that. If we rise, this country rises. And if we believe that and we move forward with that, I think that message will be well received in a period of time.
Amen.
I agree, but could someone please mute their phones? If you're not talking, please mute your phone.
Who's next?
That's Brother Mark.
For someone to mute their phone. There's background noises. So if you're not talking, please mute your phone. Go ahead, my brother, speak.
Well, I remember everything that was being said, and it kind of made me think about how we are all individually, whether we're young or old, on our individual path and journey. And while we have connections with so many different people that may influence that path, while we're on our path, our own individual journeys, there are, like the brother said, there are signposts. You know, when we're driving down the street, or we're going down a highway, we have those signposts that says Roseville, 10 miles away. It might say exit 298, half a mile away. All right. We might have another one that says Burger King, have it your way, one block away, whatever. But in our lives, we have those signposts because we are an image-based existence. We live in an image-based existence because actually data that we receive, whether it's from home or from school or anywhere, we forget that when I say the words apple, I'm not thinking of the letters A-P-P-L-E. I'm envisioning the apple that I seen with my eyes and felt with my hands and smelt with my nose and bit into and heard the sound of it and tasted. We have senses that are designed for us to collect information, and we envision it as, in the form of images. Those are the signposts your brother was speaking about earlier. And as we're going on our individual journey, there are certain signposts that are built inside of us that we receive, you know, from the environments we grow up in. But when we go from being dependent to independent actors, we go into a place where we go from being those who wait for others to care for us or those who care for themselves and make choices that affect our own lives and the lives of those that are around us, right? And when we get to that place where we have to make our own choices, we have to interpret those signs along our path and our journey in life. And what those signs say can say a lot about how we're being guided, because that's really more of an internal mechanism than it is an external one. So I remember when that phenomenon of seminars came in and they were doing these major seminars, and for a long time businesses had been doing it as an internal practice, to do seminars for those up-and-coming employees that wanted executive positions, that wanted to move forward in their businesses. And in order for them to do it, they had to learn a new skill set, right? So they would put on these seminars, invite people there and that wanted to, you know, progress in their business. They wanted to increase their revenue, you know. And so they would attend these seminars and they would give them these trainings. And these trainings would be things that would be advertised from time to time as a way for people to progress from one stage of their life or the proper use of their volition. And to the next stage, right? So I think for us, we can start developing our own seminars, right? Where men that are skilled and knowledgeable, go ahead. Skilled yeah. and knowledgeable, go ahead.
Let me insert because I think I sent you the workup, but if I didn't, I'll promptly send you the workup. And Tim has committed and agreed to stage a meeting for the Men Accountable Project. That is precisely what that project is representing, is going to be representative of. So we have things as we're talking. See, what I'd like for this body, this listening body, to understand is that we're a group of men and women who are not just airing out our venting our concerns about what's existing that may be a barrier toward our moving and growing and excelling as a group of people in this country. We're analyzing everything that is shared here, and we're structuring something that addresses those issues, and we're whittling away at oppositions to it. Every time we talk, we get more fodder for continuing to nurture and to cultivate the projects that we have on the table. So these are like planning sessions we're having. They're not just airing out and venting sessions. These are planning sessions that we have. So if you're participating with us and you get an email asking you or presenting something to you and asking your opinion about it, and then once you have an opinion, we ask you to pour in to some degree. Don't be surprised, because this is where this is only the beginning. This is not the get rid of, get it off my chest so I'll feel better. This is to get it out in the atmosphere so that we can analyze it to find out what we're going to do about it.
I say, we're going to take a moment for station identification. You know, we got to talk about our kids having their healing circle tonight. We'll be right back. Brother Will, I see your phone went off for a minute. I'm going to get right back to you after these messages.
Hooked on Fishing and Not on Violence presents Youth Healing Circle every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m.
Youth Healing Together.
2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California. Inside of Room 67. Our Youth Healing Circle is a forum where we dive into discussions about drugs, bullying, school, and life skills. We provide a safe space and inform our youth
that sometimes it is okay to not be okay.
During our Youth Healing Circle, our youth may hear from other youth as well as experienced adults how to problem solve and navigate unforeseen complexities that we all run into in life. 2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California. That's Room 67 every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. For more information, text or call 916-889-0105. Let's heal together. Peace and blessings, King. Hooked on Fishing and Not on Violence presents
the Men's Healing Circle.
Brothers healing together.
Brothers healing together.
Join us every Wednesday night from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. 2251
Florin Road, Sacramento, California, inside the Obama Room. The Men's Healing Circle is a place where men uplift, encourage, and inspire each other to be better through personal testimony, dialogue, self-reflection, self-improvement, and positive affirmation. Again, that's 2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California, in the Obama Room. Come out and pledge to greatness with your fellow brother.
Yes, sir. And tonight our youth will be getting certified for anger management with Brother Mac. Brother Mac's given up his time and his ability to run a curriculum about anger management with our young folks. And a lot of times our young folks, they say they have anger issues, but everybody get mad. And it don't become an issue until you start acting upon being mad, right? Hey, it is the Wise Words of One Gone Show. The call-in number is 515-605-9861. That's 515-605-9861. And without further ado, here's your host, Mr. Marvell Wilson, for you. I see you got your hand up, Brother Wilson. I'm going to open up your line as well. Marvell?
Okay, thank you, sir.
Before we continue, I'd like to emphasize to viewers. I mean, I guess I'm projecting. We're gonna be on TV pretty soon, but the listening audience all over the country and in other countries as well, that in Sacramento, California, we talk about it and we stage a lot of things in it. But in Sacramento, California, there is a plaza. In that plaza, I would guess there are about at least 40 active businesses with room to expand to other businesses in that building, and we call it an African market because everything in there is sponsored by, and I'm gonna say one of our elders made a T-shirt, and the T-shirt says, American-born African. So all of those facilities are manned and womaned by African-born Americans, and it's the only place in Sacramento. So if you visit Sacramento, make sure that you GPS to 2241 or the African market on Florin Road, on the south side of Sacramento, and make sure you visit the Sojourner Truth Museum. There is nothing like it anywhere that I can tell. Go ahead, Will. Oh, is that Bill? Bill, it's Bill, right? I'm calling you Will. What you want me to do?
Fine. My name is William James Bailey.
I knew it was William, but I remember you told me, you introduced me, you said your name was Bill. So what I want to call you what you want. I want to call you what you want to be called, because they used to call me Butch, and I stopped that.
William is fine. However you want to do
all
it,
right,
but William is fine. Yes, sir.
Right,
thank
William.
You. I appreciate that. First, I would like to say I agree with you 100%. I love the positive momentum that is being created out of this collective participation of men and women that are utilizing their resources to help rebuild our community. And it's not that it doesn't have a foundation, but we have to get back, in my opinion, and that's all it is, the place where the elders in our community have the most say. The elders in our community have the most say. And what I mean by that is, it's usually those that have undergone life experiences through time that have wisdom that we can use as a foundation. This is not just something that we would be creating. We're not reinventing the wheel. We're saying we're returning back to the time when we talk about Africa or Al-Kabulon, the time when the elders in our community there were the ones who made the decisions. And we know amongst many counselors, there's wisdom, and so we have a collective consciousness of elders that are able to help guide, whether it's in front or behind the scenes, the choices that are being made by our collective community. Secondly, as we are making decisions about how we're progressing forward with this, I believe when I was talking about the signpost earlier, about those signposts that we gain over time through the collective knowledge that we acquire and we begin to practice, we become responsible actors. What happens is, in my opinion and in my experience, is it doesn't just help me to have that sounding board, a sort of a visual of what I can become, where I can progress. It also allows me to become someone who recognizes that I don't have to allow my circumstances to dictate the way that I conduct myself. We have unfortunately allowed ourselves to become victims of our environment or our circumstances. And whether it's by intent or it's unintentional, we've allowed our circumstances to shape the way we think, the way we feel, and the way we behave. Stephen R. Covey said, we learn how to transform our quagmires into an oasis, or our circumstances that might not be so positive into something that is positive, something that is destructive into something that is constructive. And that requires the ability of the individual. For me, my experience has taught me my ability to gain confidence in the knowledge that I have to contribute to my community. See, if I don't have confidence, you know, fear has a tendency to inhibit choice. If I'm afraid of how I'm being perceived in my environment, the way I behave or think or act, then I'm going to be afraid to show those things. And as a result, I'll be stunted, and I might be inhibiting someone else from gaining a knowledge from me, from my individual experience, that might help them to move on to the next stage of the development and growth and progress. So learning how to build and instill confidence in us all, especially young adults, becomes important. That for me, became great. When I knew that I can stand up in front of a crowd and address my primary fear, which is, for the most part, it says statistically that the biggest fear is public speaking. So when I can learn how to allow myself to confront the fear of being judged by others and not being so concerned about how others view me, but rather how I view myself, then I'm already progressing to a stage where I'm allowing what knowledge that comes into me to be poured into my community. And I'm challenging all of us men and women that are listening to this broadcast, this blog radio, that is doing an outstanding job of influencing the minds and the hearts of people in our community to face you and to confront your primary fear. Because the secondary emotion is not fear, it's anger. And the anger usually arises out of how we are made to feel when someone we think is judging us for what we are contributing or presenting to the community. I say all this because as minorities, as they call us anyway, but I think we are the majority in the world, but as those in our community that have so much to offer, we have historically have had so much to give, that shouldn't change. And in order for that to become a wellspring of life, a place where waters are flowing from, that are nourishing and encouraging and have the ability to provide life, we have to confront those things in our individual lives that prevents us from having the confidence in the knowledge and experiences that we have that we know can help others, and to allow it to be those factors that we utilize to transform our individual quagmires into an oasis. And as we learn how to be self-governing and learn how to change our perspectives and how we feel about what we have to contribute to our communities, we can begin to shape the experiences of other people by helping them shape how they view reality. So what you are doing about these seminars and these events that you're putting on where brothers are going to be able to and sisters are going to be able to come together and have these collective discussions, I believe is going to work towards first reshaping the way we view reality, and it gives us the chance to be able to have persons who may not have an experience in public speaking to stand up and to share their individual experiences. And to then not only that, but to know that they are affirmed, they're positively affirmed in what they have to contribute, especially when it's constructive and positive. Yes, sir.
The will. The will. Listen, man, listen. That what you said is so pertinent about personal self-expression. It's not even to, we do this with the youth that we work with. In every school we go to, we start off with the will. The will is they announce their name, they announce their age, they announce what school they go to, and they announce what type of day they have. And the design for this is for them to feel and understand the power of their own voice. But don't you know that we have a difficult time getting them to understand that, so they'll come in and, my name is Marvell, I'm 470 years old. I've been whispering. I mean, we have to keep on saying, look, man, look, protect your voice. You be confident in the sound of your voice and the power within it. And we have to continue to urge that. So how important that is, personal self-expression, is so very tantamount in this quest that we're on. It's so very important that we continue to urge, not only because we have men in the inner circle, you know, for they're kind of soft-spoken in the healing circle. These men are 40-plus. Right? So it just tells you how important it is for us to learn how to be self-determined, because that's one of the principles of Kwanzaa, the second principle of Kwanzaa, Kuji Chagalia, self-determination. And that arrives when you are confident in who you are and who you announce yourself to be, man. So, you know, that is really important to emphasize, that we urge that practice. We urge people to express themselves and do it and get practice at it to the point where it's not a drudgery and it's not a holdback. It's like, oh, I ain't going to say nothing because, you know, I don't care. I don't think, no, because that peer pressure thing is persuasive even with adults. It's persuasive even with the adult population. Even adults are concerned about what they think somebody else is thinking. So they ignore what they're feeling.
Brother Marvell, we have another listener that's on that has their hand up. The area code would be 216. Would you introduce yourself and come on in the room? Come on in the room. Area code 216. Okay, back to Brother Marvell. Brother Marvell, back with you.
Yeah. I don't know. It might be because she's a very intelligent young lady and very, you know, she has, we talked about some things the other night in the political realm, and she was very knowledgeable on her. And then what she didn't have on hand, she called her son to fill in the gap. So I'm thinking that she might have been distracted or something. But I don't see her as not being one who's willing to pour in, because she's, you know, is quite conscious. So, but anyway, I'm because I'm hoping that she heard the part about personal self-expression. There you go.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello. Am I being heard?
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay. I didn't know I was speaking. I've told him my name is Anita Woolfolk. And I was invited to the group by you, Marvell Wilson. And I'm very, this is a very informative group. I just wanted to tell you that. But I'm the one who had the girlfriend who, two sons, well, there were two cousins that went out and bought guns because they no longer make them have to have a concealed weapon training. And I also have a girlfriend that I wanted to speak about. We talking about the gun violence. She had one son that got killed by a drive-by shooting here in Cleveland off of Lakeview. And then she had a son that had his organs shut down from alcoholism, from going through a divorce, and he took that route. and had that surgery where you lose weight. I can't think of the name of it right now. And she almost lost her last son the other night. He stops at a gas station on St. Clair and to get gas. And when he came out, he was robbed by gunpoint. And the guy was going to shoot him, but he let him go. And the bus was coming by as he running away from being robbed, and he jumped on the bus. And I said, oh, my God, you know, I was so happy that he was able to get away safely. But, yeah, this gun violence is out of control everywhere. And I say that the programming on TV and the music is a great influence on the young people and the old, you know, the music that we listen to. And I have a brochure that when my kids were young, and a psychologist had given me that, and it said just that, that the music would have an influence on our children. And another thing that stuck out with me with you all's conversation was about the emotional maturity. Someone spoke about emotional maturity. My dad brought that to me when I was young. He's like, you're not emotionally mature enough to understand what I'm saying. But as I got older, you know, I understood what emotional maturity was about. And what I wanted to say is that the young people nowadays need a place where they can dump their feelings, where they can share their feelings, and get feedback to give them another way to look at some of the things that they do, you know, like you guys, you know, having positive feedback because they think that maybe some of the questions that they bring up or some of the statements that they make may sound stupid, but the only stupid questions is the one that you don't ask. So, I mean, that's what I was told when I was young. And I just wanted to really commend you guys. We need something like this here in the city of Cleveland. I mean, we do have places, but I commend you all for even starting a group that can help these young black men and women because we're definitely going in the wrong direction. And with that, I pass.
Well, thank you very much for recognizing the plus factors of a movement like this. However, if you share this phone number and urge people, even organizations that exist, if we could get them to participate and share what they're experiencing and share what their pluses are and share what their visions are, we'll have a collective that's across the board. It doesn't matter what city you're in. Every city seems to have the same challenges in our black community.
That is
some
so
even more than others, right? So,
yes.
I would appreciate it if you could share this format with, you know, just, you know, hit go through like I do. I go through my phone and I just like hit. Well, not my phone because I'm kind of like a Flintstone. I had to do that stuff one at a time. Some people could do it and hit everybody at the same time. I don't know how to do that. So I'm going in one at a time, sending the blog, sending information to everybody that's in my directory that I think would benefit from this or have the time. Because some people work and we're operating during working hours. So. No, but to pass this on, and let's get started in Cleveland with the ideology, because that's what's important is that people have their ideology intact and in tow. Mm-hmm. So if you don't mind sharing this with somebody that you like and respect and ask them to do the same, I think we can start, you can create a better, more momentous kind of structure where you are. Because we all will benefit from having something that addresses these issues. Do you agree?
I agree wholeheartedly.
Right on. So that's how we grow, too. We have to grow. We have to get numbers in just to come in and dub in to find out there's something here, you know. A lot of people don't know we're here.
And I guess we're going to have to beef up our marketing, but you can help that by you know, sharing your experience as well as the number to the people that are in your circle.
I will.
Amen.
Do. I will too. And thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure.
Marvell, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, sir.
Okay. I'd also, as a member, would like to invite the sister to do the same. As you can see, it's well-meaning men, and we do need your voice on issues and other sisters in Cleveland, Chicago, New York, San Francisco, that can hear this. I too echo Marvell and invite you to be part of this daily, if you can, and some other sisters in the area. We would appreciate that. Thank you.
Sure, we will. And I go out to L.A. a lot. It's a lot that I wanted to share with Marvell. I haven't gotten a chance to see him yet. That you know, just some of the things that I've learned and found out, you know, about Los Angeles having a son that went out there, so that caused me to go out there more regular, and you know, just some things that I could probably bring to the table from that way too, and some people that are very hands on with trying to help the environment, you know, the community.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Right on. So yeah. So as your mind broadens about how we can make this thing become an organism. I mean, we're already an organism, but you know, we want to be like that fish in the tank. That, you know, the bigger the tank, the bigger the fish get.
Exactly.
Right. So we want to be able to swim in the ocean before it's over with. You know, we'll be a whale in this thing. Be the biggest land mammal known to man with our movement, because it's really everything that in my heart and in the hearts of the guys that I talk to, they've already expressed that it's two words that keep really resounding. And those two words are, it's time. It's time. You know, we may have thought it was time before, might have felt it was time before, may have been grudgingly holding, you know, resentment toward the situation because we thought it was time before and it didn't happen. And, you know, we got all of these things in our background that make it so that we might, if we're not careful, just decide to throw in the towel and let what is be. And live day by day without a vision about who we are and what we're going to be in this country. But the undercurrent is starting to become a wave of time it is. And it is time for us. It is our time.
Let me add to that. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Kev, let me add to that. We have thrown in the towel years ago. We did. All of us. We threw the towel in years ago because the language and the concept at that time is that we could make it. Here we are today with our backs pressed to the wall. And I would suggest that this is the time, as Marvell just said, critical thing. And the brother was talking.
You still there, Joe? You sounded a little garbled.
Yeah, like under the water.
Okay, I'm sorry. I said critical thinking. We're at a critical point in our existence. How do we solve that? Our minds put together and cohesively, structurally, can solve anything if we really want to. Do we really want to solve what ails us, which is us? It's, outside influences are just that, outside, if we are not at the core group of people, if we are not solid within ourselves, we're wasting a lot of time here. But if we are solid, let us take the necessary steps forward. Thank you.
No doubt. No doubt. Again, it's becoming a wave now. And we're just surfers right now. We're not quite surfing yet. We're still in the undercurrent, but we got our surfboards ready because we're gonna ride these waves once they come. So we're gonna hang 10.
Yeah.
And be on top of it.
So Brother Marvell, I wanted to tell Will, he has a lot of background distorting, a lot of voices in the background, and a lot of car movement, and if you could go to a quiet spot, Brother Will, we'd appreciate it, because there's a lot of feedback that we're going to hear on the recorded end of this session, right? And so if you could get to a quiet spot, Brother Will, we'd appreciate it.
Okay, y'all trying to find a quiet spot now.
Thank you.
How do you mute when you don't want to be heard?
So you mute your phone. You go to your phone and hit mute, and that you can listen to the show. Or I can mute you, but I don't like muting folks. I like them to mute themselves, so when they want to get on, they can pop back in.
Okay. All right. Gotcha.
All right. Thank you. You're welcome. And for the rest of the listeners out there that may call in, if you'd like to speak, push the number 1. And it'll show a hand saying that you'd like to speak. And when I open your line, I'm going to leave it open because that hand doesn't disappear when you go back on mute. That hand just sits up. And so I called True Blog Talk to ask them, how can we have that removed? When they ask, do you have any suggestions? I say, yeah. For people who ask some questions on a set, how do we get that hand to remove? And they said, well, once they hang up, I don't want them to hang up, the hand removed. So I thought he had jokes, but he was serious. Anyway, it's the Wise Words One Gun Show on Blog Talk Radio. The call-in number is 515-605-9861. That's 515-605-9861. And we are talking about the new year. And a lot of discussion came up, one being the 10-year-old killing another 10-year-old just showing off his daddy gun, right? And so it is a bad situation when you have kids killing kids. I don't care if they're 10, 20, they still kids. And they don't know the power of that gun, or some of them do, right? But do they care about the power of the gun? And then I heard someone say training, that the concealed weapons training in their state has been voided. And so you're able to go buy a gun without going through training. And so my thought to that was, yeah, why don't we have training for our people who are using guns? Because them other folks, them Europeans, they take their kids out at 6, 7, 8, 9 years. They go up in the mountains, they set up bottles, and they practice. They practice on the targets. And so that's just keeping their child ready for whenever something come up, that they may need to use that thing, because we live in a society where the gun, it's the power for most people. You heard what I said. I said for most people, because I don't own a gun, don't want a gun. If I can't talk my way out of it, pray my way out of it, I'm going to stay my way out of it. You heard me. Marvell?
Yes, sir. And that's my position on it either. But that's, to me, that's a higher consciousness that I think we would be remiss to think that everybody would be on, right? But what we can do is keep on stirring up the spiritual aspect of what humanity really means and what you can do to jeopardize it. If you're not careful, you can jeopardize not only the humanity of someone else, but put yours in a critical situation, because there are consequences, of course, for behaviors that threaten or take lives, right? And we're not doing the critical thinking that was mentioned earlier, and we're not practicing the emotional intelligence that was also mentioned earlier and just recently revisited. Having emotional intelligence, or practicing developing emotional intelligence, because I recognize with myself personally that all my challenges began with my emotional, Will said it early, my emotional instability, and then my spiritual instability that led to my mental instability. That was the chronology for me. So we're a people that would do well, and we say it over and over again, and we hope that the seed is being watered, that our emotional states lend to a lot of what we're experiencing. And to address those emotions, anger being the foremost, addressing our emotional concerns will probably likely be the key to our unity and our confidence and our faith in each other and in ourselves to move the needle and put it on that 33 and the third and get that music going. We got to pick the needle up, though. Remember that? I remember, I don't know about y'all, but our record player was broke like we are. So instead of it just automatically going back and coming and landing on the groove to start the music, we had to pick ours up and drop it in the gap. So that's what we're in now. We have a broken phonograph, but we still can get to the music if we move the needle properly. So let's keep that in mind and control our emotional issues and learn how to deal with the anger that is our nemesis to me. That is our greatest nemesis, is our quickness to anger without thinking. Because, you know, a lot of people I've noticed in our culture, they don't really care about thinking too much. You know, it's like decisions. They like for decisions to be made, and they just follow the decision that looks the best. Like my britches hanging off my butt. Not mine, but, you know what I'm talking about. Hanging off my butt. Now, I keep bringing this to you because this is the most obvious visual aid of some discord that exists in our society, because it's not explainable behavior, but it is duplicatable for some reason. Everybody that's coming up feels compelled to do this without thinking about it. Like, okay, well, what am I sacrificing here? What am I benefiting here? And let's do the cost analysis, the benefit, cost-benefit analysis, and see which one wins. And they don't do it. They're not thinking. We have to stimulate their ability to do so. And first we have to point out their ability to do so, and then stimulate them to use that ability, because they're kind of like robots. Our kids are turning into robots. They're becoming thoughtless, emotionless, and careless. Their phone, if you want to see some real emotion, take their phone. That's the only time I've seen some emotion come from kids. I watched a video the other day on YouTube where this kid, a teacher, took the kid's phone for whatever reason, and he kept saying, "Give me my phone." And the teacher kept saying, "No," because he kept saying, "Give me my phone." And the teacher said, "Well, no," because, and he cold-cocked the teacher and knocked him out. Just cracked the teacher in the jaw. I mean, on a button. He hit him on the button and knocked him out about his phone. So my concern is that we had to get in there and roust our young black folk to understanding how powerful that new addiction seems to be and how it's taking them away from their spiritual content, their emotional content, and likely to end up like me, your mental capacity. I had to get back to the fact that I could think about anything other than getting high and checking anybody that disrespected me. Those are the two main things that governed my thought process when I was in the grips. It's like, take the phone, you got to fight. Take my dope, you got to fight. Try to get me to think when I don't want to think, you got static coming from me. So the new addiction to me seems to be technology to our children.
Exactly.
And we have to get out in front of it. That's right. We got to get out in front
of
that, y'all.
It is time for us to go. We want to thank all of our panel and all of the listening audience on internet. See you tomorrow. God bless. We'll talk to you soon.
Peace.